So we come to the end of our six-week series. These beautiful banners have led us. The words of Micah have been our anchor and our frame as we've been talking about doing God's justice and loving mercy and walking humbly with God. Last week, Reverend Carissa preached on what? It was only last week, friends. Walking humbly. And this week, I'm going to preach on walking humbly. You see the difference? So she was talking about the walking part last week. I'm going to talk about the humble part this week and really focus on that. I hope you all were on your path with your partners and your purpose last week. You've been living with that, those words. And today we're going to have some guides to share and to guide us into what it means to be walk humbly with God. Some of them may seem like unlikely guides, but I'm going to tell you who all we're going to be turning to today. All right, you ready? So we're going to be turning to an NFL quarterback, the psalmist, the psalm we heard read, Psalm 25, a law enforcement official, a guy with an umbrella, an important guy with an umbrella, a famous British theologian, a country singer and a songwriter, Jesus, and a member of our church. Okay, so all those people will be our guides as we consider what it means to walk humbly with God. Now, the first one on the list may not seem like the most obvious, right? We think of our celebrity culture among our professional athletes, and sometimes there's a lot of self-promotion going on there and self-aggrandizement, but that's why this particular moment really struck me a couple weeks ago. Ryan Fitzpatrick is a quarterback for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. For a lot of his career, he's sort of been a backup. He has not been in the limelight. He was starter for Buffalo for a little while. Now he's the backup for Tampa Bay, but he was playing because the first-string quarterback was out, and he had an amazing first couple of weeks. Amazing first couple of weeks. And so he showed up at his press conference, sort of spoofing himself after having this great game. And some of you may have seen this image of him that was all over the news, and I want to just have you listen to a little bit of his press conference, and we'll talk a little bit about what that has to do with humility. Maybe not.
Whose closet did you borrow that from? Is it Gerald's?
That's the John.
No, it's his game day. Game day wear.
I guess no chocolate milk tonight. You don't drink chocolate milk and something like that.
The boys want chocolate milk again, so I think that's what we're going to go with.
Is it due for your offense to hit a play like that right out of the gate, first play again?
That was awesome. And you know, in calling that play, it's not like we knew or thought that was going to be the one. You know, we've got different options depending on what they do. And, you know, for me, that's it's unbelievable to have a guy like Deshaun, you know, out there running around, loft the ball up. He can go get it and turn it into a 75-yard touchdown. He's a special player, and he showed that again right away.
Before we go any further, what's the origin of this outfit?
Well, it's nothing. I mean, I think we just have to stay humble, you know. And we got to make sure we know how to handle success and all those things, so we can't change who we are.
How many carrots?
So, if you're paying attention, it's kind of hard to tell all of that. He shows up in this outrageous outfit. That is not his normal post-game attire. As a matter of fact, you find out later that he is wearing Deshaun Jackson's. That is his, you know, game day attire. Deshaun Jackson is pretty flashy and pretty flamboyant, but Ryan Fitzpatrick is not that. So he decides to show up at the press conference. They don't even know what to ask him at the beginning. They just are so stunned by his outfit there. He's got the bling on. He's got this cool outfit on. And, you know, they say one last time, can you explain the outfit to us? And he says, just trying to stay humble. You know, get just normal game day wear. And later on, they finally ask him, is that yours? He says, no, this is D-Jax, Deshaun's. And he says, is any of that yours? He says, yeah, the chest hair is mine. That's the only part of the whole outfit that is mine. But what I love, if you listen to the whole interview, is here's his moment. Like, he's thrown for 800 yards in the first 2 weeks of the season. He's thrown for, seven touchdowns over the first two games. I mean, this is his moment to shine, right? And he spends the whole press conference sort of making fun of himself and having fun with the press. And then he talks about all these other players around him. He He spends the whole press conference talking about all of his tight end and his wide receiver and how good the line was, and he doesn't draw the attention to himself. Now, he does in his outfit, but that was just playful and fun. That's kind of his personality. And I just love that, because I think in the day, this day of professional sports, there are a lot of people out there saying, me, 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 right? And how refreshing to see somebody who takes himself so lightly, who takes himself so lightly. And I think that's the first characteristic of what it means to walk humbly with God. It means we take ourselves lightly, and we take God seriously. And we take other people's needs seriously, but we take ourselves lightly. We're able to laugh at ourselves, right? We are that humble. The psalmist puts it this way in the 25th chapter. It, earlier in those verses, is talking about God. Teach us, O God. Teach us your ways, O God. And then when we get to the 8th and the 9th verses, it goes like this. Therefore, he instructs sinners in the way. He leads the humble in what is right and teaches the humble his way. What does it require to be led and to be taught? It requires a certain level of receptivity, right? It requires a certain ability to know that we don't know everything, right? How many of you have a friend or somebody in your circle of acquaintances who just knows everything? Anybody have somebody like that in your life? Or they are just so sure of themselves, right? They have an opinion about everything. They know the truth. And sometimes there's no room for anybody else's truth, right? And that, I don't know about you, but I don't enjoy being around people like that much, because that's not a fun conversation to have when it's a one-way conversation. It's all about them, all about them. But a teachable, humble spirit, the psalmist says, is what God asks of us. A receptive spirit to know that we have so much room to grow, so much more to learn. And I think in our culture right now, there's a lot of grandstanding and there's a lot of argument on a national level, but also in communities and in families about, I am right and you're wrong, and let me tell you why I'm right and why you're wrong. I ran into a great quote this week. It says, pride's concerned with who is right, but humility is concerned with what is right. Pride is all about trying to be right, right? I am right and you're wrong. I am the center of this and you're not. Humility is concerned with what is right. The psalmist says, teach us, O ways, your way. Teach us, O Lord, your ways, which are, lead us into the paths that are right, that are right. Now, this is the guy with the umbrella. I told you we were going to meet a guy with an umbrella. This image went viral, and if you look this image up, you see lots of different words attached with it. This is sort of the best caption I could see. But a couple years ago, this guy was caught just on an ordinary rainy day doing something nice and generous for somebody else. There was a short video clip of this. There are many images of this all over the internet. And he was walking down the street one way, noticed this woman in a wheelchair going down the street in the rain. In the other direction, he turns around and he simply offers his umbrella, right? What a simple gesture of kindness, right? What a way to be a servant, to exhibit a humble heart. And I love that caption that somebody put with it. I don't know who, but the world's changed by your example, not your opinion. Your opinion matters, it does matter, but it's your example that will really matter. And if you don't believe me, think of the example of Jesus, right? Jesus, who, in the words of Paul in Philippians, we're getting ready for a four-week series through the book of Philippians. And in the second chapter, there's this wonderful passage that leads into something called the Christ hymn, probably one of the earliest songs of the church that the Christians sang together. Have this mind in you, which was in Christ Jesus, who, though he existed in the form of God, did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself and poured himself, taking on the form of a bondservant, even to the point of death. Paul is saying, have the mind of Christ in you. Walk with humility like Jesus, who, though he was up here, chose to live down here, took on the form of a bondservant. People will notice your example. I think that's why I am drawn to Jesus. Not just because he was a great moral teacher, a great religious leader, but because of this example of total self-giving, this amazing humility. And he calls us to walk that path too. It's when Jesus washes the disciples' feet, right? It's when he models for them what he's teaching them, and he embodies that even to the point of death on a cross, offering everything. The world's not changed by your example, or the world is changed by your example, not by your opinion. How many of you have ever heard of the Baltimore Speakers Series? Anybody ever heard of that? Ever have a chance to go? I've learned about it. I'd heard about it before, but I was visiting someone in the hospital recently, and they told me they were getting ready to go. The series was starting, and so I went home. I got online, and of course, it was all sold out. The subscriptions, I hear, are 90% of the people renew. So, like, when it comes available, there's only 10% of the tickets are available in any given year. So you got to get them fast. But they were all sold out. And so I was kind of bummed because she was telling me about all these great speakers they were going to have, like, on a wide range of people, from Jay Leno and Lisa Genova, who's doing amazing work with Alzheimer's, and Ian Bremmer and Jeb Bush and Brian Stevenson, who we talked about a couple weeks ago in my sermon on Just Mercy, this lawyer who's doing incredible, faithful work representing some of the most disadvantaged and forgotten folks on death row and juveniles who have been given life sentences. And so the leadoff speaker, it's across a wide political spectrum, but the leadoff speaker was James Comey. And she called me a couple days later and said a friend of hers wasn't going and there were tickets. It was that afternoon, could we go that night? And Holly and I happened to be free, it's rare, but we happened to be free. So we made our way up to Baltimore and then got like will call seats. So we just got like to choose a seat just at the very last second. And James Comey was there. Now, I have to tell you, I felt a little, I felt for James Comey because I knew he was walking into a tough crowd in the sense that half the people would probably be mad at him because they think that he'd ruined Hillary Clinton's chance to win the election, and half the other people would be mad at him because they think he's too hard on Donald Trump, right? And so that was going to be his audience. So that's kind of interesting. What is this guy going to say to this audience, right? What is he going to talk about? He didn't talk most about politics. He talked mostly about leadership. That's what he's written a book about, leadership, and his reflection is on his life in government service and his work at the Justice Department, his work at the FBI. And this is what he said about leadership. He was very very thoughtful, very reflective, very humble. I just enjoyed his presence, and he told some great stories. But the two sets of characteristics he talked about of good leaders, you know, good leaders, like good parents, he said, exhibit these things. Good leaders are kind and tough. Kind and tough. That means that they're not all one or the other. If you are just tough as a leader or a parent, and you only have high expectations that your kids never ever meet, and you're just pushing, or if you're that way in an industry setting, or if you're that way in a church as a pastor, if you're just pushing, then people get worn out, right? And they never feel like they measure up, and good is never good enough. But by this same token, if you're only loving and kind and you don't draw out the best in people, right, then maybe your kids never developed their full potential. Maybe your church never develops. Maybe your people that you're leading in your organization never develop. So it's this balance, right, of high expectations, toughness, right, but also knowing that it's undergirded by love, unconditional love and kindness. And that's the best families, I think. And that's the hard line that we walk as parents. The other thing he said was this. He said, good leaders are humble and confident, not just one or the other. If you have a leader who is supremely confident and only self-absorbed, that's not a leader who's going to take people anywhere because they're too busy worrying about themselves, right? And by the same token, if you have a leader that is only humble and maybe soft-spoken and so unassuming, they don't inspire people enough and have enough presence to inspire. Maybe they undersell their own gifts, right? And so a leader who can be both, to be humble and confident. And I think that's a wonderful capacity to be both in our lives. C.S. Lewis, the theologian, put it this way. Humility is not thinking less of yourself. It is thinking of yourself less. Isn't that a great way to think of that? Like, God doesn't want us to undervalue our gifts. God doesn't want us to be less than God created us to be. God created us good. God created us with amazing potential. God created us to develop and grow. We have something to offer the world. But not at the expense of others, right? Never at the expense of others. We don't think of ourselves all the time. We just think, we make space for other people. Good leaders have an external compass, he was saying. He was saying that a good leader is not just driven by what's inside of them, but they have a higher sense of purpose, the law, philosophy, for him spirituality. For us Christians, that higher sense of purpose is the call of Christ, right? It's the sense that we are following Jesus in a way of life. We are following Jesus on a path. We are walking humbly with God as we follow Jesus. And we have this external compass that is bigger than ourselves. Every time we pray, every time we worship God, right? Every time we come together, we are reorienting our lives and saying that God has a place in our lives. And we have a place too in God's world, but we're not the center of it. We're not the center of everything. Whenever we turn our lives over to God, we are lying prostrate before God and offering ourselves. How many of you know this guy? Anyone know who that is? Diane, who's that? That's Tim. Just Tim. That's just Tim. Tim McGraw, the country singer, right? A lot, very recognizable, has had an amazing career. How many of you know this woman? I thought so. Not as famous as Tim. This is Lori McKellar. I saw her down at the Ram's Head with some friends this summer. They were coming to Annapolis. She loves Lori McKellar. She's been a longtime groupie of Lori McKellar. They were going to be in Annapolis. Would we like to go? And we said, sure. Who's Lori McKellar? I never heard of her. But then I learned about her. And Lori McKellar is quite accomplished in her own way. She is a songwriter that occasionally sings her own songs, but mostly she writes her songs for everybody else. And so this year at the 59th Annual Grammy Award, she was nominated for Best Country Song, Best American Roots Song, Best Americana Album, and Best American Roots Performance. She was the first woman to be named the Country Artist Songwriter of the Year, first woman to be in that. And she has written for everybody big, like everybody else has done her songs. But if I had asked you about this, that links those two, if I'd asked you about this song, hold the door, say please, say thank you. Don't steal, don't cheat, don't lie. I know you got mountains to climb, but always stay humble and kind. You saw those words on the wall of our outside of Fellowship Hall for a long time. That was the theme song. It was a song that shot up to the top of the charts, and they're playing it everywhere, and Tim McGraw had, was singing that everywhere you saw him. Our youth used that as the theme for a retreat last year. And those words really stuck with them. It was clear that this was not just a weekend experience, but those words came back. I would hear the youth talking about that song all year long in some ways. One of our graduating seniors, as he was leaving this at the senior banquet, talked about being humble and kind, being humble and kind. She wrote that song for her kids. Like, here's a mom's heart being poured out to her kids. And these are the values that she wanted her kids to have. And the refrain, it keeps coming back again and again and again. Always be humble and kind. Not a bad mantra to live by, is that? Always be humble and kind. You see, friends, people who are humble, it's a lot easier for them to be kind as well, isn't it? Because there's room. If you don't have to be the center of everything, you can be attuned to other people's needs and other people's wants and other people's desires as well. You can be kind because you're aware of those things. You're not always looking at yourself. Always be humble and kind. It's not just Micah who links those two things together, right? Love mercy or love kindness and walk humbly with God. Micah links those two things together. It's Tim McGraw and Lori McKellar, too. Maybe they're onto something. In Matthew 18, the disciples come to Jesus. And they come up to him, and you'd think by chapter 18 they would know better. But they don't. They say, who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? So what Jesus do? He calls a child in their midst, puts him right front and center and says, truly I tell you, unless you change and become like children. Now I want you to know that in Jesus' day, children didn't have the same place that they have in our society. Our society elevates children. We spend a lot of attention, put a lot of attention on children. Children are like the center of our lives. We overvalue children, if anything, right? We love them to death, which is a good thing. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, right? But in Jesus' time, there was a pecking order. You know, there were adults up here, and by adults, I mean there were men here and there were women here, right? That was the way it was. And part of the radicalness of the Christian movement was that those men and women were in ministry together, evening that out. But then there were children way down here at the bottom. They didn't have power. They didn't have status. And so when Jesus is saying, become like a child, It's not just a nice thing like we think of today. It's like be willing to go low like a child. It is being willing to learn and to grow and to be inquisitive and curious and filled with wonder. Whoever becomes humble like a child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven, Jesus says. If you want to be great in the kingdom, Jesus is always flipping the tables, isn't he? Always turning things on their head, always turning it upside down. If you want to be great, be like a child. Be humble like a child. Then you'll be really great in the kingdom of heaven. I want to close by talking about Don Lloyd. We had his service here as a wonderful testimony to his life on Friday. His life ended way too soon and too suddenly. But there are wonderful tributes that his son posted online and then his nephew also posted on Facebook. And at the close of my remarks at his service, I read from his nephew Morgan, who had written about his Uncle Don. And I want to close my remarks today with this story. Morgan said, "In my toddling years, I thought of Uncle Don as a magician, would sit me on his lap and pull quarters from my ears. How, I asked, could this be possible? He would simply smile and repeat the trick. Watch, he'd say, and you'll find out. Right away, he instilled a sense of wonder and a desire to know. He promised that with patience, observation, and effort, the impossible was made possible. This he continued into my adolescent years as he encouraged me in my schooling, my sporting, and scouting careers, attending graduations, most every game, and swearing alongside me the Eagle Scout oath, which he had achieved decades earlier. There was never a book I had read which he had not, nor a task which I had done which he had not already done better. Here's the key, though. As yet, my uncle never once boasted or carried himself as though he were a man of importance. Rather, he'd be quick with a joke, insist that he was just a simple guy, a husband to his high school sweetheart, a father, a Ravens fan, a beachgoer, a Sunday usher. It was this that proved to me that he was no magician. No, he was a true wise man, a man who devoted himself to excellence in everything and whose example promised that the same was possible in you. The same was possible in you. I don't know what you want said about you at your memorial service someday. But if someone could say that Ron was sort of down to earth and didn't try to draw attention to himself and tried to draw out good things in other people, and Ron was maybe humble and kind, if they could say that about me or about you, like his nephew was able to say that about Don, that would be enough. That would be more than enough. So today we give you one last charge in this series. Walk humbly with God. Every day, in every relationship, in all the areas of your life, walk humbly with God. And just so that you'll have a chance to hold on to these words of Micah long after this worship series is over, on your way out of church today, I hope you'll pick up one of these cards. It's a side that you can tuck in your wallet, or you can put in your purse, or you can clip it on your refrigerator to do something with it. But on the front, it just says, "Do love walk. Do love walk." On the back, the full verse of Micah 6:8. "He's told you, mortal, what is good. What does the Lord require of you but to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly with your God." Thanks be to God. Amen.